Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for November 16th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me in cyberspace is Jim Allen. What's happening, Ben? How's your Premier 12 doing?
Oh, it's moving along. They decided to have these games very late at night to keep, you know, to increase my overtime.
But it's been a lot of fun. I think tonight we had, or today and tonight, we had the most interesting games. We had two tiebreakers, which was first for the tournament. And, yeah, it's been good fun.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the Premier 12. We're going to talk about the Golden Gloves and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so game two of the Premier 12 was for Japan was against Mexico on Wednesday, and Japan won 6-5. Sho Nakata put on, at that time I said, a one-man show with his bat. He drove in five runs, had a two-run homer, and had three hits, including sayonara single in the ninth inning after Tetsuto Yamada doubled to start the frame. So it was a long game, but it was a nice win for the Samurai. Now, it shouldn't have come to that, I thought. I thought Hiroki Kokubo, and he reminded me of the fact that he's kind of a young manager. In this sense, is that I thought he kind of he could have gone to the pen a little bit earlier, I thought. Mm-hmm. And then in the situation where the game was on the line, I thought he should have tried to match up a little bit better, which he didn't do. But maybe, again, I said this in the past, is we're privy to the outcome, but we don't always know the plan. And maybe the plan is for him to get some of these guys, because he went and purposefully picked a young squad. Mm-hmm. And I think he wants to get him some international experience. And I don't think they're afraid to lose a game, or I didn't think they were afraid to lose a game. So I think that's part of the thing that kept him from going out to the mound. But he does seem a little sluggish on taking the pitchers out sometimes and going from
there. Yeah, I think he has been slow to the mound. I think he's been sort of like following his plan. You know, his plan, the only place where he's made a switch where he took a pitcher out earlier, you know, in an inning earlier than he had hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
Or brought in a reliever because, you know, it's the end of the game, so we're going to go with one of the four closers on my staff.
Right.
But he's been pretty laid back and letting the guys play the game.
Yeah, I think we've seen that now. Like I said, I don't know if it's that he wants to get the guys' experience, or he wants to see how they perform in these situations, or is it that he has a plan for the number of innings he wants his guys to throw. He doesn't want to overuse them in this preliminary round and then have them be tired in the next round. I don't know. We don't know what the plan is, but he just seemed a little bit sluggish. But they won the game 6-5. Like I said, it was pretty nice for Sho Nakata. He had a really good game. And then the next day, on Thursday, they beat the Dominican Republic 4-2. And my theme in that game was the show must go on, because Sho Nakata comes
sure
on.
Sure enough.
He had three more hits, three RBIs, including a tie-breaking two-run double in the eighth inning, and that was right after the Dominicans had tied it with a two-run homer. And that was off of Ryan Ogawa. So again, in that situation, I kind of thought, well, in a matchup situation, you probably would have gone out to get Ogawa, because he's normally a starter, and we saw what international competition did to guys who. With Japan, who maybe I think was in the Olympics too before, who were normally starters and who were working as relievers, didn't seem to work out very well for Japan, but this is years and years ago. And so I thought probably it would have been a good idea to go and get Ogawa after he gave up a base runner, but he didn't, and then a home run, and the score was tied. And that's when I started thinking, okay, he's just not gonna remove pitchers from the mound if he can help it. You know, he wants them to get through. And those were the first time I had the inkling. Well, that's not the first time, but I started to get an idea that, you know, he's focused on not only trying to win every day, but get these guys some experience.
Or get them through their assigned tasks, which is getting out of this inning, as opposed to letting them, you know, taking them off the hook in a sense.
Right. But, go ahead. And if it's me, I don't leave the ball in the hands of a starter in that situation. I guess I go and put the ball in the hands of a professional. and I get a reliever out there who knows how to handle the situation, and it's just a situational thing. You know, what kind of pitches to throw.
I'm not. You know, some guys take to it and some guys don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is true that, you know, the relievers are, I guess, more used to airing it out. They're not trying to be starters.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we have seen cases in these international play. I mean, the WBC, where they have pitch limits, it's very hard. You know, basically most teams will go with basically 8 starters and use them in tandem. Mm-hmm. You know, one after the other. And one of the guys I remember in the 2009 WBC who was very effective in relief, in, you know, in 2-1-2-3 inning spots, was Sugiuchi.
Toshia, yeah.
Yeah, he was just dynamite. He was a guy who kept him in a lot of these games when it, you know, things were down. And he's a starter, but he didn't seem to mind coming in middle. He was basically a middle reliever.
Right.
In 2009, he was really effective. So, and of course, they used Darvish as the closer when Fujikawa went out. So.
Sometimes it works, and sometimes it probably isn't a good idea. And
well, you know, he gave up the tying run to Korea, but he was pretty good otherwise.
Yeah. All right, well, so I decided that was something I was going to keep my eye on, watching Kokubo's pitching moves. And then came game 4 on Saturday, because there was no game on Friday. They had a day off, and that ended up being a 10-2 victory for Japan over the United States. And my theme for this one was, there are no showstoppers, because Sho Nakata came out again, and he hits a tie-breaking 3-run homer in a 4-run sixth inning, and then Yoshitomo Tsutsugo he had 3 consecutive run scoring hits in that game, and Nobuhiro Matsuda had a grand slam in a 5-run seventh inning. And you know, I was thinking, because I early on the U.S. was leading this game, and I'm like, guys, you guys realize you're just borrowing the lead, and that you're going to have to return it with interest, you know?
Yeah, well, that's how it turned out, and I guess I would reverse that. I guess, you know, the continuum makes the Sho Nakata the headline, but I would go with what Kokubo said too after the game, was this game really belongs to Tsutsugo, because he kept them in the game.
Yeah, no. I mean, he did have one of those momentum changing hits. He had the momentum changing hits, but you gotta get the lead. You know, getting the lead is important.
And you know, the other guy, and of course you know me, and things like being contradictory.
You?
Yeah, I know. Never thought of that.
And I'm just the opposite. I'm so agreeable.
Well,
wait. Get to your point.
Yes, thank you. You assume I have a point? Wow, where did that come from?
Anyway. I assume you have 10 points. I just have to cut you off at 2.
Hashtag high.
You know, point is, you know, you look at, you know, Tetsuo Yamada comes up to the bat, and they show his stats, and it looks like he hasn't done anything in this series.
Yeah, that's true.
This guy's been grinding out. I would be surprised if he's leading the tournament in runs scored.
Yeah, and walks. He's getting on and walks.
I mean, he's getting on. He's hits and walks, and he's on base all the time. And you know, he scored 3 runs 2 games in a row.
And he's playing some pretty good second base too.
Yeah, he's been very steady. He hasn't been trying to, you know, he hasn't been trying to crush the ball. I mean, he's taken some pretty good swings. And the other thing is, you know, the other pitchers know who he is, because
mm-hmm.
they've been pitching him very carefully. And he said, okay, I'll take first base. Give me that.
And you notice when he gets on base, they throw it to the first like 3 times before they make a pitch.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, they know exactly who he is.
Exactly. So, no, he's contributed quite a lot. So it's been really a team effort. And Nakata, you know, has had the big hits. One of the, you know, he was very fortunate to have the double tonight.
Yeah, he was. It was fortunate.
Carried, in fact,
the ball carried looked like the left fielder lost it in the lights for a second. I mean, there were a confluence of issues going on out there, and they all met.
Nakata thought it was an out. he was jogging down to first like it was a sacrifice fly, and he saw the ball drop. Oh man, I better get my butt to second.
Yeah, it probably should have been a sac fly. That's what I thought it was actually.
You know, and he had the double, which was, you know, just barely fair. But otherwise, no, he's been hitting the ball well. I think it took 3 games before he didn't get a base hit with a runner in scoring position.
Yeah.
So no, he's been really good. But would I give? Yeah, I would go with. I think Tsutsugo was really big in that first game, and And, oh, yes, Nakata changed, you know, put them in the lead, but, you know, they wouldn't have had a lead if it wasn't for Setsuko, so there. Or they wouldn't have had it tied if it wasn't for Setsuko, so.
Well, good, you take Setsuko, I'll take the guy who's winning the game. All right, so.
that's such a ridiculous thing to say.
I know, well, I'm teasing you.
No, my guy is the guy who won the game, therefore I'll take him.
Remember, we talked about this. What about, you know, the guy who makes the winning game-winning shot versus the guy who scored 40 points to get you in a position to have a game-winning
shot. Yeah, that's the Associated Press line. Everyone is somebody, you know, somebody was really bad for three quarters, but he went 9 for 10 in the fourth quarter and they won, so he was the most important player.
Well, I wouldn't say, yeah, Nakata
but it's pretty consistent American sports writing, you know, whoever got the last hit. So, you know, Akira Nakamura was the biggest, he was the hero, and it's pretty common in Japan too, you know, it's the Yoshihito Ishii MVP argument.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Get back on track here. So, I looked at the USA squad that night, and I'm thinking, you know, Willie Randolph, it's really nice to see him out there. I really would like to see the USA do well, and I believe they won tonight, and they're going to go to the knockout stage. So
yes, they did. They finished second because they finished equal in wins with South Korea, but because they beat South Korea, they finish ahead of them.
Right. So. But I was looking at that squad that night, and the pitchers, and it's essentially a team that was similar to the team that went to the 2008 Olympics where they finished third and beat Japan. I think in third place, the bronze medal game.
Well, everybody beats Japan, especially Korea. So it's really not any surprise when you say the team that beat Japan. You just pick one out of a hat.
Yikes! All right.
They don't do well in the Olympics. Yeah. I mean, Australia beat them in the semifinals in Athens. And the only reason they got a medal is because Korea wasn't there to beat them.
Yeah.
I mean, South Koreans beat them like a drum in the Olympics. So. Well,
I was just thinking, looking at Willie Randolph as a manager there, he looked good in the dugout, but I just thought he was undermanned in this thing, and they really had no chance, and that's the way it turned out. But
yeah, they had great starting pitching. I thought Jared Grube was brilliant, and one of his teammates is a Japanese fella, Toru Murata, and he was going, Grube, on Twitter. He was so excited.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And then there was the game tonight. I guess we can even say last night for us, since we're taping late again. 6-5 walk-off victory over Venezuela for Japan, and that's Akira Nakamura of the SoftBank Hawks coming through with a single that zipped through a five-man infield. So
yep.
That was good. And that came after Yuki Matsui, who was nibbling like a New York City subway rat.
Have you ever seen a New York City subway rat?
Well, there's a video out there that went viral of this New York City subway rat nibbling on some pizza. So you should Google that and check it out.
I'll take your word for it. I just wanted to do a veracity check there. I was wondering about your point of reference.
Answer is not in person, but I got close enough through cyberspace. So anyway, Matsui was nibbling, and it cost him because after he gave up the... go-ahead single after loading the bases, he closed out the inning, you know, by throwing some sharp pitches. And I thought, again, well, he's given up the lead. Maybe this time Kokubo will go out and get him, and he just didn't. You know, he left him in the face to face more trouble, and the kid got out of it. So I was impressed with that. But
well, Salmer was heating up, but no, he didn't. He didn't move quickly enough in that respect.
Yeah, he didn't go. He didn't go. So. You know, I like what Japan's doing in this tournament. And the thing that came to mind was, I think a lot of teams probably have this image of Japan as the small ball slap hitting team from Asia. And I think this squad really changes that dynamic because, and think about it, Yuki Yanagita is not here, and here's a guy who swings. He's got a hellacious swing. Who's not here, but if he were here, that would make more than half of the batters in the lineup guys with a lot of power. You've got power hitters in Yamada. You've got power hitter in Okawari-kun, Takeya Nakamura.
Setsuko, Nakata.
Setsuko, Nakata. So you've got four guys who can take, and Matsuda. You got five.
And Matsuda.
Guys. Yeah, five guys who could really take you out, and you add Yanagi to that lineup. That's a really power laden lineup. Right. That's a lot different from what I think a lot of teams come to expect from.
Yes,
from
Japan. I think the other, you know, the irony to that is the Dominican Republic game when. the Dominicans really, they played some nifty baseball. And what I mean is they just beat Japan to death with bunts.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that the Japanese must be going, and I've seen that happen living in Japan. I've seen that happen a lot in international competition, but it's the first time I've seen somebody do that to Japan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Other than perhaps Korea.
Yeah.
One. But, you know, I've seen one of my favorite baseball games of all time was a college in the Japan U.S. college series, which they have every year, 2 years. The American collegians were basically bunted to death by Japan. And I mean that they just bunted, and the Americans got so frustrated with fielding bunts that they just sort of fell apart until the pitcher lost his composure and started grooving fat pitches and three-run triples. You know, it's like four bunts in a row, and he just kind of lost his marbles.
Right.
So, but this was watching the Dominicans bunt, a couple of beautiful drag bunts, one to the right, one to the left. Beautiful. Another, I think there were three bunt singles in that game. Absolute works of art.
Yeah. So, I mean, Aaron Guile said on the show last week, he said, you know, Asia and particularly Japan is taking this tournament more serious than the other countries. And and you look at Japan's lineup and the guys are going to run out there on the mound. And I just see them as the favorite, and I'd be surprised if they don't come through.
Yeah, I would be too. I was thinking, I was watching, but some of these games have been so good. A lot of these games have been so entertaining. I thought Italy had a great game today against Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
The Puerto Rico Taiwan game was really, really good. The Korea USA game was really, really good. Just a lot of entertainment. What great entertainment it's been. And I guess what I wanted to say was I was watching these guys, especially I was watching the Americans play against Japan, and I had to think, so many of these guys are sort of older AAA guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, I'll bet there's half a dozen of them who are thinking, you know, if I play well against Japan, I might be able to play in Japan.
That's exactly what I was telling somebody at work. I said, look, most of these guys, it used to be that the Japanese guys were showing off, like when we saw the first years of the WBCs, the Japanese guys are showing off for the major leagues, saying, hey, look, I can play with you guys. And now it's completely reversed. It's like these guys who they're bringing over, since they didn't bring, a lot of these countries haven't brought their major league players.
Well, they're not eligible.
They're not eligible, and they're not here.
Under contract, they can't.
They can't play. So,
why I wanted to say to Norichika Aoki and Sapporo is get your butt down on the field, dude.
Yeah, and so you have a bunch of guys who are thinking, you know, I could play in Japan if I do well, you know, and it's completely reversed. So it's a really interesting dynamic there that has switched around.
Yep.
From what we've seen. But my complaint about this whole tournament is that, you know, the streaming doesn't work online. The homepage gets stuck or blows up because there's too much traffic there and you can't find what you're trying to find there. And they're trying to make this thing a big deal. But at the same time, they're trying to elevate and what's under their foot, basically, because they're crushing it with all the things that are not working. And it just seems rinky-dink and small-time to me. And it's really unfortunate because, as you said, there's so many good games. I haven't really noticed a bad game. Even the blowouts have been interesting because...
Well, I mean, the U.S.-Japan game wasn't a blowout until the very end.
It was not a boring game at all in any respect.
No.
So it's just too bad. It's really unfortunate.
I don't know where the blame goes. Part of the issue, I think, has to do with the facilities in Taiwan. And I say this because during the qualifying for the Beijing Olympics, I'd wanted to go to Taiwan, and that didn't happen for Olympic qualifying, but so we just decided, okay, you'll just do the stories from the internet. Well, what happened was the internet essentially stopped.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I'm asking guys on Twitter, and some of them are saying, well, this link is working and this is working, but it's just blacked out here. And you can see where you go to something on YouTube and it says, you know, it's not available.
Yeah, well, that's
country,
because that's normal. I mean, that's normal for tournaments of. For this kind of thing. What isn't normal is that the website doesn't work. And I think this is the WBC's, WBSC's issue is that they're not used to organizing tournaments of this caliber,
right,
of this interest level.
Yeah, and you say it's normal, but I say it shouldn't be, especially this is your first year. This is when you're trying to build up interest in your product. And
yeah,
and
well, I think there was a lot of things that went wrong. One was the word we got from the WBSC, and I asked repeatedly all, you know, since February, basically, how's it going with the major leagues? Oh, we're having good negotiations.
And then, well, that's...
And when I talked to MLB, it was like, well, they haven't talked to us. So there's a disconnect there.
Yeah, it means no news is good news. Good negotiations.
Yeah, so there was that, and then there were a variety of things that were sort of like, I think the plan is good, and I think bits of the execution have been very good. It is a very good tournament. I think it's going to be huge in 2019 because it's going to be the Olympic qualifier.
Mm.
So I say huge, which means the U.S. might send 40-man roster guys who aren't currently, you know, who didn't play on the 25-man roster.
Right.
You know, they'll send better prospects.
Better prospects. There you go. All right. Well, we got to move along, but I'm really disappointed in what I'm seeing as a product here, other than the games. Everything outside of the games have been very good. Everything else has just been mediocre, except Twitter. They're very active on Twitter and giving updates, but other than that...
But the website seriously needs...
everything seriously needs attention. Yeah. Make these games available. People want to watch them, and you're blacking them out. It doesn't make sense.
Well, yes.
Okay.
But that happens.
All right.
Or have radio or something, some sort of intermediate.
Some alternative, yeah.
Like Rugby World Cup does.
All right, let's talk about the Golden Gloves. Now, they were announced on Tuesday, and I'm not going to go through the whole list, but were there any surprises for you, anything that kind of blew you away or ticked you off, or, wait a minute, I see that face. That's the rant face. Well, then let me go first. I was just...
John, I'll suspend disbelief. Go ahead.
All right. For me, I was just shocked to see Kosuke Fukudome on the list as an outfielder. I know, and he set a record. It was 9 years. He last won it in 2006, and he was actually pretty good at that time, but when he was with the Dragons. But it's the longest gap between Golden Gloves in NPB history, and I'm not sure that he's all that deserving. I mean, he probably didn't commit a lot of errors, but I don't know that a guy who gets replaced, you know, in late in games for a better fielder is worthy of a Gold Glove. He played okay. He made some catches. He made some plays, but he wasn't great.
I think he had a pretty good season.
Yeah,
I mean,
pretty good.
He had a good season for an outfielder. I think it was very adequate. Which is, people who've watched Kosuke Fukudome play in the last. You know, even before he went to the States,
mm-hmm.
would say it was a pretty good year for him.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, he's always struck me as being a really big first half player. He used to come out and he had lightning in his arm. You know, you didn't run on him in April and May, but by August and September, yeah, he just run around the bases. He's not going to throw you out.
Well, the thing for me is, you remember he came to the team as a shortstop, and they couldn't find a position for him with the Dragons, and they threw him out in the outfield, and he was just horrible, and he made himself into a really good, decent outfielder. I'm not sure even then, back then, it was Golden Glove worthy, or Gold Glove worthy. They like to say Golden Glove here in Japan.
Well, they did for a good reason.
Yeah.
That's what the award is called.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So, anyway, the other story for me was Kenta Maeda winning it for the fourth straight season
he's really good. He's a very good fielder. Actually, I voted for Chris Johnson instead, but Maeda was up there.
Yeah. I was going to say I think he got it more in reputation than actual work done on the field. But go ahead. I see you have this rant here.
Well, no, I think the word you're saying there is reputation, and I think the other one is image.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Golden Glove awards are essentially about image. And unless there is no image, in which case we'll just pick somebody out of a hat, like on a winning team or a good hitter. Now, case in point, to it odd even it, would be first base. this is the category of, well, we don't really, the guy who's the best fielder doesn't really fit our image of a good fielding first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pick somebody on a winning team. So that was Kazuhiro Hatakayama won the Gold Glove. He didn't deserve it at all. The guy who should have won it was a guy who didn't look smooth, who was Shinosuke Abe. And Shinosuke Abe was really, really the best first baseman in the Central League. Now, he made some poor decisions, but I'll tell you what he did do.
What?
What the Giants did, what the Giants' first baseman did, is made a huge number of unassisted putouts. I mean, by, like, nobody is comparable to that. I mean, basically, what a first baseman does is he catches the ball, he fields balls around the first base area, and he makes a few throws here and there. And the Giants were really good, except for the errors, which they were about average. And Abe gets most of the credit for it. I mean, you can't give it to the people who didn't play there as much as he did. So, you know, he didn't look good, but the fact was he gobbled up a lot. You know, he didn't get all the balls, but he sure gobbled up a lot of them. He did very well. The first baseman.
So yeah, you're right about
that. Nobody else was even close.
Yeah, you're right about him not looking good. I didn't count the outs. I guess, you know, my eye test is what I normally use, and I wasn't impressed with his movement. I wasn't impressed with his range. I don't think he was throwing very well. You talked about decisions. I think there were some standout decisions that were bad that we remember late in the season.
Yep.
And I'm not going to.
I think that's why he didn't win.
I'm not going to cast that. You know, I'm not going to blame him for. I'm not going to say anything. I just looked around at first base. I thought if anybody was going to get it, it was going to be Jose Lopez. Just
yeah, he was. I thought about that too, but you know.
Yeah, he wasn't great either. I just didn't think anybody deserved it. I thought it was a none of the above situation. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the first one. Second base in the Central League is all image. Now I guess it depends on what you think is valuable. Mm. But now Yosuke Kikuchi is still better than anybody at chasing down balls.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is he just isn't as valuable right now because his ability to turn the double play, which was always kind of dodgy,
mm-hmm.
has been slipping. I mean, it was terrible this year. Now, I don't know how much what it was sort of like everything with the Carp was kind of like this. Like players who should be playing well weren't. Mm-hmm. Now, he can still, you know, on his own, he's absolutely wonderful going after balls. Nobody can catch him like him. But the total package and double plays are so important. The Carp were terrible at turning double plays. The Swallows were superb at turning double plays. And I voted for Yamada. You know, he didn't look like the Golden Glove, but they just had it was just a much more impressive total. Kikuchi made a bunch of errors. He didn't turn double plays. His range ain't what it used to be. Yamada's, on the other hand, has gotten drastically better. But it's the double plays that were the killer for me. So anyway, I thought Kikuchi won on image without people really thinking about it too much. I understand he's a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a really good player because he can go and get the ball. And that's the image.
Yeah.
It's an amazing image he's got. So, yeah, you know, I mean, if you're Kikuchi.
Well, he's created it. I don't think he got it. I think he.
Well, he does have it because he created it. Yeah. I mean, that's like the Pete Rose one saying, you know, I'm not saying it's like he's lucky to have it. He's really good at that.
Yeah.
The whole problem is the whole package ain't as good as Yamada's.
Yeah.
Or at least it's going downhill. And here's the other thing, too. It's normal for a player of his age because, you know, here's a guy who became a regular when he was 25. The speed at which middle infielders lose range, you know, when they get past 23, 24, 25 is really quick. I mean, these guys, most guys, their defense declines fairly precipitously, and he's at that stage where he just doesn't have the gas that he used to. I mean, his range from 2 years ago was, his last year was better than this year, and 2 years ago was better than this year. His whole package 2 years ago, even when he had a first half that was total error city,
mm-hmm.
Was better than last year's, and then last year's was much better than this year's.
Okay.
So no, I think Yamada has surpassed him. So I thought that was interesting. But, you know, what I expect, as long as Kikuchi's playing, he's going to win a Gold Glove because he looks better. Yeah. So, okay, that's essentially that. Now, third base, well, Kawabata won. So Kawabata's not a bad choice. I know Claudio was wondering how come Balderas didn't win it, but Balderas is not good on turning double plays. He's good at, again, he looks pretty good. I don't think he's bad. Here's the award that really stuck with me, and that is shortstop in the Central League.
Well, I mean, let me touch on third base real quick.
Okay, touch third base before we go to short.
I just didn't think that anyone really stood out at that position either. You know, I was really hard-pressed. Even, you know, we'll probably talk about the best nines next week, and there's some positions in the Central League where you're just searching for anybody. And I thought, I mean, Hector Luna, I really like him, but I don't think he's a really good defensive third baseman at all.
And, you know, the guy who's the best, I think, is Imanari.
Yeah.
With the Tigers.
And he just didn't get enough...
And he didn't get enough playing time. I may have voted for him anyway. I don't remember, but I did think he was the best.
Yeah. So, when you start putting these awards together and you start looking at some of the numbers once the season ends, it's real easy to see why the Pacific League was so much better than the Central League, because it's easier to pick. There's a lot more candidates for these awards.
Well, the shortstop in the Pacific League ain't easy to pick.
Because not at all.
I swear, you could take Adachi and Nakashima and Imamiya. But Imamiya, Nakashima, Takuya Nakashima of the Fighters, and Adachi of the Buffaloes.
Right.
You could pit those three guys in a hat, and they're so close. They're all good. I mean, they're not identical.
They're not alike,
cookie
yeah.
cutters. They've got different skills, but they've all got different valuable skills. And they're all good. They'd all help you. And I don't think there's so little difference between them. You know, they just give it to – and here is the reputation factor. Imamiya won it last year, so let's give it to him again. He must be the best since he's won it.
Right.
So other than that, I'm pretty good. I thought that I did think the Pacific League votes were pretty easy. Matsuda, I think Nakata. There isn't really any first baseman who can field in the first place other than Nakata. Luis Cruz, I thought was a good pick. He didn't have a particularly outstanding year, but he was almost a Central League pick.
Well, he was basically the Ryosuke Kikuchi of the Pacific League, because he would make some really great plays, and then other times he wouldn't make some plays. I don't know about his double play turning. I think it's probably a lot better, but he made a lot of great plays, a lot of flashy plays to get a lot of attention.
He did, and of course the vote was after the Climax series. So that didn't hurt his chances, but he was good. I mean, his numbers were good, and it was second base was not a real power, real strong defensive position in the Pacific League this year. With Takuya Nakashima moving from second to short.
Yeah, well, what I wanted to say about Sho Nakata, I thought also in high school he was an outfielder and a pitcher. And when he came to the Fighters, he really had no position. I think they wanted to try to put him at third.
Yeah, and then they tried again a couple of years ago to put him at third. It was weird.
And they had him in the outfield.
That was last year in the spring training. They were giving him another shot. You remember this position that you're really bad at? We want you to remember how bad you were at it.
Yeah. And so they had him in the outfield, and I thought he was a decent outfielder, and he has a good arm, and I think at the time, about 3 years ago, I was talking about the Fighters having one of the best outfields in Japan at that time, and he was included there. And then they threw him over at first base, and he wins a Gold Glove, so I'm really impressed with the way he has developed himself. I don't think he has a great amount of range, but he's got better than average range. For Japanese, you know, for guys, they like to throw it at first base in Japan, and now he gets a Gold Glove. I mean, it's quite a turnaround for him, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's a better fielder than he looks like, and I mean, he was so bad at third base that, you know, that's a long story. I thought that was about the worst decision. One of the worst decisions Masataka Nashida ever made was, I want to push him, I want to challenge him by screwing him up. Yeah, I mean, that was the plan, was to, you know, to motivate him, but it just kind of set his career back about 2 years.
Right. All right, well, let's make a four-seam transition here and talk about some of these players who are making some moves. Now, I saw on Thursday morning there are a handful of teams that seem like they're interested in acquiring Tony Barnett. Again, I'm not sure that they'll pay the money. You know, when you think about it, it's not that much money, and I think they can sign him fairly at a reasonable rate. So if you throw in the posting fee and whatever salary they're thinking about giving him, it probably would be a good deal if they think he can produce for them or be effective for them at the major league level.
Shouldn't they have already announced that? I mean, the posting was like over a week ago.
Right. I don't know.
I think Monday, I think we'll find out about the time this show goes on the air.
Right,
Somebody's picked up, agreed to pick up the tab on that.
Right, but his agent apparently was talking about the fact that there were a bunch of teams out there showing some interest. So that would be interesting. And then we didn't talk about Lee DeHoe specifically last week, only mentioning that he was going to go to the States or go to the major leagues or try to make the jump to the major leagues as a free agent.
Right.
And I just wanted to, you know, talk about what I felt about him. And you know, I've talked to a number of pitchers. I've talked to a number of other players. You remember Bobby Scales played with him at Oryx and said he's a really good hitter. But, you know, if you look at the negatives, he's going to be a slow runner. He doesn't have great ability at first base. In fact, they meaning the Hawks, and the Hawks, it's probably unfair to compare.
I think he's a pretty good first baseman, actually. People have said that, but I think they...
Well, I think he has good hands. I'm just, you know, it's the range that I'm concerned about. And then the throwing, I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to make those quick throws and quick plays because he's going to have to involve his feet. And I don't think he has quick feet in any...
he needs to go into a windup, you know.
Yeah, to get all that stuff going into a windup.
Yeah, he used to be a heck of a pitcher, actually.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just not sure how everything is going to translate with him on the major league level. I don't see him hitting a lot of home runs unless everybody's just going to throw him fastballs, and he's going to get his share of fastballs a lot more than he sees here in Japan. So it might turn his bat around, but I don't know. I'm not seeing a major league. I'm seeing more of a Hiroyuki Nakajima situation where he goes over with expectations of playing in the majors and stuck in AAA for a while. But, you know, he could surprise me.
I would agree with that. I mean, you never know, you know, at some level, you never know what he's got that will work that we're not seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I essentially agree with you. He might surprise us, but I don't see how that can happen.
Yeah.
Of course, the other one was the day after Japan beat South Korea. Nobuhiro Matsuda said he wanted to be a free agent.
Right, and he wants to make the jump to the United States. And for me, Dennis Sarfati on the show earlier this year said he would get exposed if he went to. That's the wording that he used on a JBW interview. So he would be exposed if he went to the States, and I should have asked him, you know, what exactly he meant, and I'll have to guess. It's just that, you know, he has a tendency to chase a lot of pitches out of the strike zone, and I think that could be exacerbated when he goes to the States. But he can handle fastballs, and
he can handle pitches
in the strike zone.
Yes, and his approach from a physical point of view, the way he stands and where he stands and the pitches he looks for is fairly, I don't know if it's unique, but it's idiosyncratic. You know, he stands way back in the batter's box, and so people try to pitch him inside, and he's like, yeah, okay. And so everybody ends up pitching him away, and then he dives into those pitches,
and that's where
you can always get him to chase.
And thus we get that hot foot dance, you know.
Yeah, he does it so much
on pitches away where he's chasing and gets a piece of it, and he ends up doing that hot foot dance.
And he's diving, and he's good at fouling off those pitches. But you know, you can. Now my thinking on Matsuda is this. He has plenty of talent. First of all, it's an incredibly difficult challenge to get used to seeing lots of Shohei Ohtani speed pitchers. Mm-hmm. When 32, 33, 34 years old. I think it's hard when you're 27 and you're not used to seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
This is something you need to get exposed to when you're 20, 19, 20, 21, 22,
mm-hmm.
like his colleagues in the major leagues will be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a tough adjustment. You know, you just can't get the reflexes and the muscle memory that you had when you were 23. Okay, so that's one. Two, I think he's a smart player, and I think he's a determined player, and I think he's a very athletic player. So I think that plays into his ability to make adjustments to his approach that will work. So, but I still see the quality. I won't say the quality of the pitching, but certainly the speed of the pitching. In any case, so I think he can make adjustments if he says, you know, if he starts his role of I'm gonna try to make it here, and it doesn't really matter how I make it. I just have to find the best solution for me. Then I think he can. I think he's going to have to look at a different kind of, you know, some other things that'll work. Give up this or give up that. You know, keep the, you know, make contact, keep up the on-base percentage, and play good defense, which he certainly can do. Could he be a valuable major league player? I think the answer is yes. Will it be easy? No. Can he do it? Again, I think yes. Is it 50-50? But yeah. I think the San Diego Padres is always are the team that's rumored to be going after these half chances, like Torii Tani last year. So Torii Tani is probably, I think, the better comp than Nakajima for him, in that, you know, he doesn't get the contract he wants, he's not going.
Right. Yeah.
Both these guys have said they'll be happy to go back to the Hawks next year.
Yeah. You were sold on Matsuda like early on in his career, and I kept looking at the numbers and the results and saying, I don't see it. And then eventually he grew into the player he is now. So I think he's going to need a longer adjustment period, I think. And he's going to have to give, I mean, he's going to need a team to give him some time to make those adjustments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There has to be, you know, there has to be. And this is the thing, you don't, teams generally don't make commitments to 32-year-old infielders.
Yep, yep. So we will see how that goes. Now, we did learn that Matt Merton will be leaving the Hanshin Tigers, so we wish him luck in finding another team. Hopefully it's here in Japan. If not in Japan, maybe somewhere else. I think he can still play.
Yep.
This
is kind of a rough question to ask you. Who do you see as a good fit for him? I sent him an email the other day, and I mentioned a couple of teams that I thought would be really good for him.
I didn't think about that. I thought about his defensive situation, his age. He hasn't really been injured, so he's healthy. So I still think he can play in the outfield. But I kind of saw maybe a move to the Pacific League being a better situation for him, so that he can just concentrate on the hitting part and not worry about the outfield part. And, you know, you look at the teams that finish near the bottom, and I'm looking at the Eagles and the Buffaloes and thinking that maybe either one or both could use him. So I don't know. I didn't think about that, though.
Well, the Buffaloes have that logjam, that left field, first base, DH logjam right now.
Yeah, but nobody's really filling any of those spots. So if you get somebody who can fill one of them, you can put him out there.
I thought of the Eagles, and I also thought of the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's also complicated, because if the Marines, I think Despaigne is back for another year, and you know, with Kakunaka and Kyota and, you know, and that whole gang, that's a tough one too. Yeah. I like everything about that.
Yeah.
Lions don't want anybody that as it's not slow, but he does have a limited arm. And I, of course, the limited arm is going to hurt him in the outfield in the Pacific League more than it does in the CL.
Right.
So okay. Anyway, yeah. So.
And, you know, we've got these 30 somethings who are going to try to make it over in the big leagues, or at least they're looking to make the jump over there. So I'm thinking of guys who played here and then went back to the States and had some success. And most recently we have Colby Lewis, we have Ryan Vogelsong, and we had some other guys who have been really good exports or re-exports. Or I don't even know what you want to call them from because they didn't really have much of a major league career, and then they pitched here, and then they were able to have some success in the major leagues. I don't know. They're all 30-somethings.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. When you get to that age, I mean, the guy who had the amazing turnaround in his career who became, it's hard because batters, having looked at this quite a bit, players don't really, as a rule, don't dramatically improve from the time, they make tiny, trivial, they make small adjustments here and there, they get stronger here and there, they get smarter here and there, but they really don't become vastly better players after whatever age they mature, which is very often at the age of 23. If the guy's a really good player at the age of 23, you don't expect him to be, twice as good at 25. Mm-hmm. He's figured out everything, it's really hard for him to see him be much better. If they haven't made the adjustments, then okay, you can see he can still do this, he can still do that. At Matt's age now, I think that's really hard. I think he could play in the States in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a better player. As Japan does, it makes a lot of people better players. It gives them more, more in their toolbox. Gives them sometimes something mentally. Not everybody agrees with me on this, but it can give you something if you can find it. I think he could. I think he could be better right now than, or not any worse than when he came. I shouldn't say that negatively, but not below the level he was when he arrived. But yeah, in terms of players, position players who became significantly better, and who were able to make the adjustment to the majors better after coming to Japan, and at the age of 28 or 29, there's really just one, and that was Lee Stevens. It's pretty rare. Lee Stevens came to Japan. He played a season and a half, age 26, 27. He was a no prospect, very borderline major leaguer at the age of 26, came here, played a year and a half with Kintetsu, and then he basically was a major league regular for 5 years.
What about Cecil Fielder?
Cecil Fielder, yeah, well, he played, 1 year? I think it did make him a better player. Cecil Fielder's biggest thing was leaving Toronto, where they didn't know whether to play him or Fred McGriff on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So I think getting out of Toronto was his, hunching was useful for allowing him to escape Toronto.
Yeah.
But same thing, he wasn't an older player at that time. He was still in his 20s, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess Cecil Fielder, I forgot about him because he was only here for a year, but Stevens was only here. I checked with Vladimir Ballantyne because Lee Stevens came up in that discussion when they were talking about him 2 years ago, making a dramatic improvement.
Mm-hmm.
But the dramatic improvement I found with Vladimir Ballantyne is that he just has become so much better at beating up on mediocre pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Against the best in NPB, he's essentially, if you gave him, the best in NPB is better than the major league norm, so that's kind of harsh. But if you put him against the best NPB players for a season, in a 162 game season, he'd be a 250 hitter with maybe 25 home runs.
I'd take that.
Yeah. So, and he's probably better than that in the majors. So, okay, maybe he's a 270 hitter with, 30 home runs, but he's not a, he's not a 40 home run guy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. A couple of notes. Tsuyoshi Wada is back with the SoftBank Hawks, and he said he doesn't just want to come back and be another guy. He wants to be the guy at the front of the rotation, so we'll keep an eye on him and welcome him back. And then on Monday, I think it was Monday with the gambling guys, right? That came up, because on our paper we didn't do it until I think it was Wednesday's paper. But all right, I'll just say this past week we did have the three pitchers, the Giants pitchers, Satoshi Fukuda, Shoki Kasahara, and Yuya Matsumoto. They were all banned indefinitely because they were found to have placed bets on pro games, pro baseball games, and other games in 2014 and this year. And we talked about it a couple weeks ago. The commissioner, Katsuhiko Kumazaki, came out and made the announcements, and made that announcement. And then he added that the Giants are going to be fined, what, 10 million yen, some chump change. One of the Giants executives, I think he's the senior managing director of the Giants, he stepped down. The team has...
The representative, the guy who attends the board of directors meetings.
Right, and then two other execs had their pay cut by 50%, blah, blah, blah. I didn't really actually think it would come, that there would be this much done, but I think there's two things. It's twofold. One, you know, it is the Giants, and if the Giants let something like this slip by, then all the lesser teams are going to think, or the players on lesser teams, I think, are going to see it as a sign of weakness. So I think they wanted to make a strong statement in that respect. And the other one was because it is the Giants, I think the commissioner had to really come down hard.
Well, he came down hard, but of course, they had essentially a third-party panel investigate this, and the commissioner followed the recommendations, and the fine to the Giants could have been worse, but they essentially said that because of the degree of cooperation from the Giants,
mm-hmm.
That it didn't need to be so harsh. And in the terms of fines, I thought this was kind of interesting. The biggest fines to a team in NPB history was 30 million.
Mm.
And that was has happened twice. Once to the Dae Hawks in 2000. For 3 years before that, they had rented out their stadium during the Japan series, figuring they were never going to play in it. And so they had the Tuesday Pacific League Game 3 was held on Monday. So that a convention of a brain surgeon convention could be held at Fukuoka Dome
to see what's wrong with them.
Well, let's put it this way: there were brain surgeons there on Tuesday, but not on Monday. So, in any case, the Hawks were fined 30 million yen for that, and before the 2007 season, the Cebu Lions were fined 30 million yen for having held an in-house investigation and then calling in a third-party panel to investigate their team and clean the house, and for announcing that their team had broken the rules. So basically, they did what the Giants did. They did it voluntarily, proactively, but they were basically fined 30 million yen for causing a ruckus.
This was the scandal with the under-the-table payments to
players.
Drafted or players that they planned to draft.
Yes, neither of whom ended up playing for the Cebu Lions. Now, here's the thing: they were then punished in the. They were banned. They were. They weren't banned from the draft, but they were limited. They were not allowed to draft a first or second round draft choice that fall that autumn. And then, when the third party commission came out and said that. This stuff is the kind of things the Lions have been doing is pretty widespread. Boy, they were jumped on and beat up, and everybody said, "Shut up, shut up, shut up! It's a bunch of you're liars, 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 and we're not going to listen to you."
Mm.
And then, of course, we know that basically a lot of that stuff was true,
right?
And as it's appeared in the Asahi Shimbun. So, and the Giants have been trying to sue the Asahi Shimbun for saying that's true, it did happen, but you shouldn't write it anyway.
Right. What do you think it's going to be the impact from this thing? I like I said, I didn't think they were going to ban these guys, and apparently it's indefinite, but it's not a lifetime ban. But...
No, it is not an indefinite suspension. Basically, they have to keep a clean record, and after 5 years of having a clean record, they can appeal for reinstatement.
Yeah. And so Kasahara is 24, Matsumoto is 22, so those guys might be able to come back. Fukuda is 32. I think
he's done.
I think he's done, yeah.
Yeah, he was done for a couple of years. And just by the way, they have a lifetime ban, but that was not invoked because there was no evidence that they had been consorting with organized crime or as the documents as antisocial elements.
Right.
And yeah. Although... it's kind of fuzzy because one of those antisocial elements is habitual gamblers, and apparently, the guy they were associating with was a habitual gambler. But they might not have known that. So anyway, so that comes with a permanent ban, a lifetime ban, which is appealable after 15 years. Mm. So just, I guess that's maybe what they expect your lifetime to be outside of baseball. I don't know.
I was thinking the MPB just wanted to stamp out any kind of possibility that there was any gambling or match fixing or game fixing going on.
Well, they didn't discover any game fixing.
They didn't, but I think that was the thing. And that's what I just assumed the whole time, that they were going after trying to see if there was anything, any impact.
Yeah.
And that's why they were going to come down the way they were going to come down. And it was the right thing to do. And I think I'm hoping that it came up clean. You know me, I'm always the optimist, and I always think the best of situations and people. And I would hate to think that anything is or has been going on in MPB. So I'm just going to assume it's clean until it's proven otherwise.
Well, they did discover with the Giants that there is a culture of gambling, but that's sort of like a culture of being Japanese. And they found that that these three players and other players habitually played cards for 10,000 yen a hand in the minor league clubhouse in Kawasaki Stadium.
Okay.
Right. So there's a lot of other people and a lot of other things, and you know that's where you know these guys are used to gambling. And I'm not saying you shouldn't gamble, although it is technically against the law. But I'm saying, you know, you have to be careful who you associate with, because there's some dangerous and scary people.
Okay, all right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, graveyard ball, here you go.
It was well documented that the Hawks and the Fukuoka Dome added a porch or a much closer fence to add private seats and a terrace. How many home runs happened in Fukuoka in total this year, and how many came in the porch, both the Hawks hitting it and the Hawks allowing home runs to fall on that shortened fence, and how many were also deep and would have been home runs in 2014 and before that?
All right, so the number of terrace home runs. So, yeah, SoftBank didn't get back to me, but Jim Allen did.
By way of the magic of Twitter, John asked the question, and while we were talking, it appeared on my screen in a tweet.
All right, so the number of terrace home runs that were hit in Fukuoka Yahoo Oku Dome this year. The number is... dun 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 dun. Of the 144 home runs hit at the ballpark this season, 71 went into the terrace.
So basically double.
They had 70 last year, so it's all double.
Yeah, and so it makes perfect sense. It's almost exactly the same number of ones reached the seats as last year. Didn't have to reach the seats, just had to...
They had to clear the preliminary fence.
Yeah. Well, and even in center field, they got a yellow stripe below the top of the wall, so you can hit a home run without hitting it over the wall.
Right. So in 2014, there were only 70 home runs hit at SoftBank at Yahoo Oku Dome is what they want to call it. So we have to follow them. I still want to call it Yahoo Japan Dome. But anyway, 70 home runs, and then this year that number basically has doubled to 144, and 71 of them went into the basket or the terrace. And then the other breakdown is that the SoftBank Hawks hit 77. Home runs, and 34 of their home runs went into the terrace, and that means that 37 of the opponent's home runs went into the terrace. So that's the breakdown there, and they got, you know, what they wanted. They shortened the fence a little bit, and they brought it was at 5 meters on that on that home run terrace, and that really made a big difference, as we see here.
And what it did was, you know, with their better pitching this year, it meant their ERA still went down. Their ERA at home went down. They gave up more home runs. It's okay. Well, we just don't give up anything else.
And it could still go down. Although we did learn later in the week, I think, that Jason Standridge won't be back with the Hawks. Right. So that just opens up an opportunity for somebody else to go out and pitch well. So.
Yep.
They got arms.
They're waiting in the wings.
All right. Well, we are no longer waiting in the wings. We are stepping out, and we're going to hit the sheets here. Thank you guys very much for listening to the end, and we will have another show for you next week. So enjoy your Premiere 12.
Yeah, baby.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Omiyori Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.